this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and yep, you are listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. And here fair freedom shall forever reign. I see a train, a glorious train appear, of patriots placed in equal fame with those who nobly fell for Athens or for Rome. The sons of Boston, resolute and brave, the firm supporters of our injured rights, shall loose their splendors in the brighter beams of patriots famed and heroes yet unborn. Yeah, it's you and me. It's Utah, back again after a little hiatus there. I had to take a vacation because I was just really, really tired. But this is, in fact, me, and I am alive, and I am well, and I am here in the studios of KVMR. We have just passed the 4th of July, and so I'm going to do my 4th of July show a little bit late, you know, to celebrate freedom. What freedom? Well, finding a radio station that gives me the freedom to say what I damn well please, and boy, that's well worth celebrating. KVMR, the voice of the Foothills up here in Nevada County. Nevada County, California, where we are once again wading through a political morass, our progressive community locked in mortal struggle with a hereditary oligarchy. Of course, that doesn't concern you out there in the great American nowhere. It concerns us. Besides which, you got your own problems, and God knows the nation does. I would not be so rude or so crude as to call our president a fathead. I would probably be more inclined to say that he is perhaps in need of cerebral liposuction. No, the 4th of July, I am not going to offer you a polemic or a paean. I think simply a recollection of my America, my West, my frontier as I inherit it, and try to pass it on through. The new and the old. Well, let's start out with a poem. A cowboy rodeo hand up there around Billings, Montana, Paul Zarzyski, and his bucking horse Moon. And then we're going to follow that with The Song of the Leathers, 1915 poem from Badger Clark in Montana. My friend Mark Ross in Butte, Montana, put a tune to it, but you're going to hear it sung by Sawyer Tom Hayden. Has a cow operation and a one-man sawmill on the Evans Ranch there above Evergreen, Colorado. Spent many a fine day with him up there in the shadow of Mount Evans. Well, Bucking Horse Moon.
A kiss for luck, then we'd let her buck. I'd spur electric on adrenaline and lust. She'd figure eight those barrels on her crimson missile sorrel. We'd make the night air swirl with hair and dust. At some sage-brushed wayside, 3 a.m., we'd water, grain, and ground-tie missile. Zip our sleeping bags together, make love in any weather, amid the cactus, rattlers, and thistle. Seems the moon was always full for us, its high-diving shadow kicking hard. We'd play kid games on the big night sky. She'd say, "That Bronco's blue tail flying, ain't that old JT a spurring off its stars?" We knew sweet youth's no easy keeper. It's spent like winnings all too soon. So we'd revel every minute in the music of our Buick running smooth. Two rodeo and lovers cruising to another beneath Montana's blue-roan bucking horse moon. The Augusta show at 2, we'd place again. then sneak off to our secret Dearborn River spot. We'd take some chips and beer and cheese, skinny dip, dry off in the breeze, build a fire, fry the trout we caught. Down moonlit gravel, back to blacktop, she'd laugh and kill those lights for fun. That old wagon road was ours to own. 30 shows since I'd been thrown, and 87 barrels since she'd tipped one. We knew that youth won't keep for rainy days. It burns and turns to ash too soon. So we'd revel every minute in the music of our Buick running smooth. Two rodeo and lovers cruising to another beneath Montana's blue roan bucking horse moon.
The most famous, I think, or one of the most well-known, respected, well-read cowboy poets in America was a man by the name of Badger Clark. He wrote a poem called The Song of the Leathers, which a friend of mine by the name of Mark Ross, who hides out up in Missoula, Montana. And Mark played this song for me and a long time ago, about 10 years ago. And I kind of stuck in my mind, and it's been gradually building up a little bit of steam every time I play it. He put the poem, the words, to music. When my trail stretches out to the edge of the sky, in a desert so empty and bright, and I'm watching the miles as they go crawling by, and I'm hoping that I get there by night. And my horse never speaks through the long sunny day, and my saddle, he sings its creaky old way. Well, it's easy, easy now, easy, for a temporary pace ain't no crime. Let your horse hit it steady, but give him his ease, 'cause the sun hammers hard and there's never a breeze. We will get there in plenty of time. When you're chasing the critter, well, it's hit the high low, and you're spurring your horse till he flies, and you're checking your chances of throwing a rope, and you're wiping the sweat from your eyes, and the leathers, they squeal with the lunge and the swing, and you work to the livelier tune that they sing. Well, it's reach 'em now, reach 'em. If you lather your horse to the heels, well, there's a time to be slow and a time to be quick. Never mind if it's rough or the bushes are thick. Pull your hat down and fling in the steel. I've rustled all day and I'm making for rest, and I'm ordered the night guard to ride with the tired little moon hanging low in the west, sleepiness fighting my pride. Well, I nod and I wink at the dark herd below, and my saddle, he sings as my horse paces slow. Well, it's sleepy, sleepy now, sleepy. We was ordered a close guard to keep, but I'll sing you this song in a drowsy old key. Oh, the world is a-snoozin', why shouldn't we go to sleep, partner mine, go to sleep?
Oh, Tom Hayden come down off of the mountain to sing in Denver. It's wonderful to be able to play the music that I've picked up along the way over the years that you might never hear. That's a little tape that he made there in Denver, Colorado. Tom Hayden down off the mountain and Paul Zarzisky. By the way, Paul reciting that poem was accompanied by Dwayne Eddy. There's a name you don't hear every day. And I love finding the stories, the great stories of my West, of my territory, that can be turned into songs, but can be turned into poems. Burt Russell, up there in Harrison Flats, Idaho, in the narrow panhandle, he sat and told me what it was like in the logging camps of the early days up there in the Northwest. Oh, they slept on the ground next to the fire and watched their clothing steam, hoping that it would be dry by the time to go to work the next day. There were no bunkhouses in the forest, you see. And it didn't do any good to write your congressman or senator about the conditions because the congressman and senator owned the forest, or they owned the mine, or they owned the land the wheat grew on. That's how you got to be a congressman or a senator. No, the only way to deal with it was at the point of production, is to say, you know, to deal with it right in the workplace. So they organized. Of course, the foreman would hire on stool pigeons to rat on the organizers, you see, and they'd have to hit the skids and walk out of the forest. Well, White Pine Shorty, Burt Russell said, was a crackerjack organizer for the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, or Wobblies. Now, what he would do is he would sign on as a stool pigeon, which got him into the camp. Well, he would kind of walk around like a little banty rooster, but at night, now, White Pine Shorty had this little tin box. And in that box were these stickers called Silent Agitators. It was a little cartoon on one side, they had a bunch of them, a variety of sentiments. One of them, for instance, would have two panels that would show a factory with smoke coming out of it and a bunch of unemployed guys sitting around a fire gazing wistfully at it, you know, wondering why they got laid off. And then on the other panel, it's the same factory with the smoke coming out, but the big, rich boss with his big cigar and his diamond stick pin and bowler hat gazing wistfully at the plant, and the caption says, "Why not lay off the boss? It makes more sense." Well, White Pine Shorty would take those silent agitators. Now, they were covered on the back with a glue impervious to diamond drill and atomic blast. It is cornstarch paste. We thought the formula had been lost, but no. You want to make something everlastingly a part of the wall to which it is affixed. Use cornstarch paste. That'll do the trick. File that away. That's just good information. Well, he would go down to the workers' outhouse. See? Well, he knew the boss never went there. The boss had his own fancy crapper up there at the office. You want to start worker education, friends, do it in the restroom, because the boss never goes there. He would paste the silent agitators all over the inside of the outhouse door. Now, it might take that logger 3 or 4 sittings to realize that that door was trying to tell him something. He'd get out on the end of that misery whip, that long two-handled saw, and he'd say, "Hey, Fred, what do you think about that on the inside of the outhouse door?" Well, a conversation started, and the conversation started all over the forest, and those conversations moved into the bunkhouse at night or into the round the fire at night, and everybody realized they had the same problem. So they organized, and the boss couldn't fire everybody who wouldn't have an operation. Now, White Pine Shorty could organize a logging camp without or opening his mouth. He just gave those working loggers the tools they needed to become self-organizing, which is the best kind, isn't it? Well, Burt Russell said that singing was always a big part of those bull sessions in the logging camp. So here's one of those songs from that time. Old T-Bone Slim, a giant logger Finnish immigrant, wrote this, called "The Lumberjack's Prayer."
I pray, dear Lord, for Jesus' sake, give us this day a T-bone steak. Hallowed be thy holy name, but don't forget to send the same. Oh, hear my humble cry, O Lord, and send us down some decent board, brown gravy and some German fried, with sliced tomatoes on the side. Observe me on my bended legs, I'm asking you for ham and eggs, and if thou havest custard pies, I'd like, dear Lord, the largest size. Oh, hear my cry, almighty host. I quite forgot the quail on toast. And let your kindly heart be stirred and stuff some oysters in that bird. Dear Lord, we know your holy wish. On Friday we must have a fish. Our flesh is weak and spirit stale. You better make that fish a whale. Oh, hear me, Lord, remove these dogs, these sausages of powdered logs, your bull beef hash and bearded sprouts. Take them to hell or thereabouts. With alum bread and pressed beef butts, dear Lord, you damn near root my guts. Your whitewash milk and oleorine, I wish to Christ I'd never seen. Oh, hear me, Lord, I'm praying still, but if you won't, our union will. Put pork chops on the bill of fare and starve no workers anywhere. Amen.
Well, I don't suppose he applauded there at those bunkhouse bull sessions or not, but that was a live concert doing strike relief for the telecommunications workers up in British Columbia once. On strike against Connecticut General Telephone. Well, you know how that goes, don't you? All right, let's see what else going on out here. The frontier began at Nebraska across the big river, Kansas, you see. The Harvest Stiffs, one of the great organizing drives. In fact, the first effort to organize agricultural workers was industrial workers of the world, was the Wobblies, Agricultural Organizing Committee. And they were pretty successful. Of course, in those days, you moved on the freight trains following the harvest from south to north, following the crops. You'd get paid off, climb on the trains, and boom on to the next job, you see. Well, of course, the jack rollers, the tin horn gamblers, they knew when the payday was, and so they get on the freight trains too and engage these guys in a crooked game and fleece them for their wages. So the union, the Agricultural Organizing Committee, they had a wobbly dehorn crews who specialized in spotting these jack rollers, and they would engage them in a game, and when they found them cheating, pitch him out the door. Now, I heard this story from what might be the oldest living wobbly in Chicago there, Carlos Cortez, whose father had been a member of the IWW, up from Mexico. Now, he told me this story, and then I sat down, and in my own way, I made up a poem out of his words. So we're going to listen to that poem. I've run across this whole bunch of poems I haven't seen for 40 years, and I thought I would put them to work. We'll listen to that, and then a song recorded in 1964 by Eric Anderson and Phil Oakes, the old Broadside, and they'll be singing Old Nebraskio. Working out of Fresno on a wobbly D-horn crew, tracking down a hijack in the yard, we ran into a stranger no fellow worker knew, and he greets us with a ragged deck of cards. We climbed into a boxcar as the train was pulling out and settled down to deal a hand of draw. Now, I've been had by experts, boys, I hope to shout, but this was the damnedest thing I ever saw. We knew we had our man by the way he laid him down, or maybe by the way he raked it in. A greenhorn might think he had the hottest luck in town, but a gambler don't need no luck to win. He dealt him from the bottom and the band inside his hat, and places, boys, I'm just too proud to say. He was so damn crooked, I'll tell you for a fact, he had to screw his pants on every day. Well, I fumbled in my bedroll for a little tin horn bait, a Missouri bankroll bigger than your fist. I stole it at a diner where I nearly always ate, but that roll of toilet paper won't be missed. He reached inside his jacket and threw down on the crew. 'Twas a fancy little nickel-plated gun. Then he hollered, hand it over, but that stranger never knew that we was there to have a little fun. I threw a feint. Billy swung, but Curly did the job. We picked him up, and out the door he sails. Now let that be a lesson if you try to bilk a wob. You'll find you're only fit to grease the rails. So listen, fellow workers. There's hijacks everywhere. That's how the bosses built up all that lard. But if you've got to gamble, make sure the game is square and bet your money on your union card.
Have you heard about a country where the rivers run free That's a place where I think you ought to go. Where the corn stands high, tall as the sky, on the great plains of old Nebraska. In school I learned of men who died by the gun, but not of those who died by the hoe. The land has drunk the rains of many a farmer's blood, not forgotten and buried long ago. And where are the hands that plowed fields without sleep, hands that saved a dying calf without rest? And where's the feet that walk down hot dusty trails on their way to seek their fortune gone west? And where are the fathers who died in the dust, and mothers who died hungry in the snow? And where's the kids that watch the banks plow the houses down? Those are things I guess my teachers never know. So have you heard about a country where the rivers run free? That's a place where I think you ought to go. Where the corn stands high, tall as the sky, on the great plains of old Nebraska. Now you tell me droughts hurt only corn and not men. You smile and say hard times gone away. I guess I should listen to my city politician who keeps telling me that these are better days. Is there anybody left to walk a muddy mile? Is courage a word that's only said? Is it true them dusty days are days that never really were, but are only tales and books to be read? So have you heard about a country where the rivers run free? That's a place where I think you ought to go. Where the corn stands high, tall as the sky, on the great plains of old Nebraska.
The rare old recording, Eric Anderson and Phil Oakes. Well, Mark Ross's name came up there a couple of times earlier on. Now, fellow worker Ross, Smokestack, we call him up in Butte, Montana. Where is Mark Ross today? Well, I know exactly where Mark Ross is today. It's Sunday where I am, you know. I don't know what time it is where you are, but time is irrelevant. In the general scheme of things, time is irrelevant. Take my word for it if you don't believe me. Mark Ross, right now, is sitting in the M&M, the old bar, old cafe in downtown Butte, Montana. He is there completely covered with used Filson logging gear that he picks up at the secondhand stores, wearing that big Ranger hat with the Montana peak, and he is enjoying the breakfast special, which is two pieces of bacon, two sausages, two pancakes, coffee, juice, and three eggs for $2.50. Good morning, Mark. Mark has taken the trouble to track down a lot of the old poems about working the mines up in Butte and to make some good songs out of them, too. Well, we'll listen to him reciting the Stewart Mine Disaster and then a song that he made up about one of the great mines called the Never Sweat, the Seven Stacks of the Never Sweat. Here's Mark Ross.
It was blasting time in the Stewart Mine. It was time to go off shift. The muckers were working on the 3400 and were stopped by smoke in the drift. The poisonous fumes enveloped the men. Their hearts were filled with fear. They coughed and strangled and gasped for air. They knew that death was near. They reached the station just in time, but one man was late. Pat Harrington was fatally gassed. The company claimed it was fate. The least we can do to prevent these deaths is to build our unions stronger, then force the company to make the mines safer, so that we can live a bit longer. Seven stacks of the never sweat, silhouetted against the sky. A union miner dead on the ground. Will somebody tell me why? I was born on Dublin Gulch in the year 1910. No question that I would go underground. All I could ask was when. How I wish I could forget that day. I was only 10 years old. I was staring out the window at Dublin Gulch. The sky was gray and cold. 12,000 men are out on strike and the mines are all shut down. Portal to portal was the battle cry before we go underground. Here comes Roy Alley with a pistol in his hand and the company thugs behind. Marching down to the Never Sweat Gate, down to the picket line. USOB's Roy Alley said, and he fired his pistol in the air. I'm getting damn sick of you Union men getting in my hair. Now if you took all those company thugs, you wouldn't find half of a brain. The strikers, they were all unarmed. They were shot down just the same. 15 men on the Anaconda Road, lying in the dirt in the mud. 15 miners all shot down, one won't get up. Those miners, they were all unarmed, but the Butte police, they say, these men were shot by persons unknown, so Roy Alley gets away. In Butte, if you're a company man, you can drink champagne so fine, but you'd better learn to enjoy small beer if you're working in the mines. Well, Butte, Montana is a mighty fine place, given you're a company man, but if you're shot down on the Anaconda Road, the company don't give a damn. Stacks of the Never Sweat, silhouetted against the sky. On the richest hill on earth, a lovely place to die.
Well, that's a chilling piece of work, isn't it? Yeah, thanks, Mark. Oh, working in the mines, working in the wheat harvest, working in the logging camps, working, working, working. Who was it? Well, immigrant people, for sure, but, well, after the Civil War and the collapse of agriculture in the South and the chronic post-war depression everywhere else, young people headed west. They left the farms, they left the dying little towns, and they headed west looking for some kind of a life. They were called boomers. I am assured by Lost John Cloud, a friend of mine, that when they lined up on the border of the Indian Territory for the Oklahoma land rush, that a cannon was fired to start it, and when the people heard the boom, then they raced on in to stake their claim, and hence the word boomers. That's where he claims the word comes from. I have no reason to doubt him much. Boomers. Hard life, working people, but didn't do it in the same place all the time, kind of like over-the-road truckers. There are very few booming trades anymore. I'm in one of them, a go-about. Well, one of the most popular songs in the teens of the last century was Where's My Wandering Boy Tonight? We'll give you a parody of that from along about 1916 or 17. Where's your wandering boy tonight? And then we'll bring that home, we'll bring that full circle with the song that I made up about events of which I was a part in about 1964. Where's your wandering boy tonight and old buddy goodnight? Where is my wandering boy tonight? The boy of his mother's pride. He's counting ties with his bed on his back or else he's bumming a ride. Well, where is my boy tonight? Oh, where is my boy tonight? He's on the head of an overland train. That's where your boy is tonight. His heart may be pure as the morning dew, but his clothes are a sight to see. He's pulled for a vag. His excuses won't do. 30 days is a judge, you'll see. Oh, where is my boy tonight? Where is my boy tonight? The chilly wind blows. To the lockup he goes. That's where your boy is tonight. I was looking for work, old judge, he said. Says the judge, I've heard that before. So to join the chain gang far off he is led, to hammer the rocks some more. Oh, where is my boy tonight? Where is my boy tonight? To strike many blows for his country he goes. That's where your boy is tonight. Don't search for your wandering boy tonight. Let him play the old game if he will, a worker or bum, he'll ne'er be right, so long as he's a wage slave still. Oh, where is my boy tonight? His money is out of sight. Where'er he blows, up against it he goes. Here's luck to your boy tonight.
I was there when they opened the boxcar and found him stone dead on the floor. Though thumbing and bumming was all of our trade, no one had seen him before. He wore the face of a stranger, lost and unseen in a crowd. He looked so small as we carried him down, wrapped in a newspaper shroud. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight. His hair was the color of winter, all streaked with iron and coal. And all you could see in his soft prairie eyes was the wind and the grass and the snow. The backs of his hands were like road maps, the lines on his face were the same, and on his left arm a faded tattoo bordered a rose and a name. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight. I don't know where he came from, his train was a UP freight. If there's someone waiting for him down below, he'll be a little bit late. So give him a line in your paper, and here's what I want you to say. There's some things worse than dying alone, one of them's living that way. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight.
Kenny Hall, the voice of Fresno, California. You know him. God, Fresno needs a voice, and you know it. Thinking about old friends, people that I've encountered along the way. I remember back 40 years ago or so. Oh, I can see him now, a little tiny man. God, I don't know how old he was, but righteously old. Walked with a silver-headed cane. Elegant, slow-walking fella. That was Charlie Kelly. Charlie Kelly had sort of pioneered San Rafael Swell down in Middle Utah. That's where Butch Cassidy and the Hole in the Wall gang used to hang out. Excuse me. Charlie Kelly, well, he wrote books. It was hard to find a publisher, so I hear he built a own printing press down in Torrey, Utah to print them. Wrote a book called Holy Murder about one of Brigham Young's hitmen, Porter Rockwell. Wrote a very rare book called Outlaw Trails about Matt Warner, who rode with Butch Cassidy. That's when they were up there in Daggett County, Utah. Daggett County's up there in the high Uinta Mountains. A place for the, well, at least when I lived there, the county seat was Manila, named for Dewey's victory at Manila Bay. But you couldn't get to the county seat up there except to drive into Wyoming and then cut back into the mountains. There's a place up there in Daggett County called Brown's Hole. I think on the maps now they call it Brown's Park. And that's where the cattle rustlers, Butch Cassidy and that crowd, would pasture their stolen cattle. Well, the cattlemen of Ruitt County, Colorado. Well, anyway, out of Charlie Kelly's story, I made this poem, and that why tell the story twice. So here's the true story of the passing of Tom Horn, and then we're going to listen to another friend of mine, old friend of mine, I haven't seen him for years, Steve Cormier, who from Wichita, Kansas, used to be a working cowboy. The last time I saw Steve a couple years ago, it was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he was a male model for magazine advertisements. We're going to have Steve Cormier singing Sam Bass.
Gather round, you cowboys, and pull up to the fire, and I'll commence to tell you all a tale of Tom Horn the rustler and gunfighter, you all know, and the time he rode out on the outlaw trail. Now, I know his reputation won't bear too close a look, but hold your fire until my story's through, and I will tell you how there was a great injustice done, and I'll swear right now that every word is true. It was up in old Brown's Hole not so very long ago, by the river that we sometimes call the Bear, where the outlaws came to hole up and hide out from the law, and they used to brand their stolen cattle there. Well, Tracy Lamp Killers and Wild Butch Cassidy, the boys from Powder Springs, were all there, too. So the marshals went in after, and some came out alive. You know, they must have buried quite a few. Now, the big association had lost so many steers, it was certain that the lawmen had all failed, for not a single outlaw had ever been strung up while their friends were there to bust them out of jail. So young Tom Horn was called in to hire out his gun and go up there and clean those rustlers out. Though he was not so famous as some other names you've heard, he was the fastest in his day, without a doubt. Well, he rode up the Uintas into the outlaw town, and there he joined up with that rustler band. Yeah, he rode with them at Rawlins and down along the Green, but he was careful not to show his hand. But one by one the outlaws began to disappear while riding out to check the herd at night. It was Tom Horn who met them and called them to account, for none could stand against him in a fight. So pretty soon the rustlers grew scarce and hard to find, and those who were still living drifted on, and the big association sent a message up by wire, "Good work, and now your job is done." But they did not want it known that they had hired a gun to do a job the marshals couldn't do, so they paid him off in Rawlins and told him not to tell this secret that was known by just a few. Well, he rode into Cheyenne and entered the saloon, and there they jumped him 20 men or more. The ranchers of that valley, they knew the rustler band, and everyone had seen his face before. The sheriff would not listen. They laughed and said he lied. His reputation there was known too well. So they wired to Ruitt County on the chance he might be right. The cattlemen who hired him would not tell. So they put him in the jailhouse, but he never came to trial, for a lynching mob broke in and took him down. They strung him to the rafters until his neck was broke, and they dumped his body on the edge of town. And this is the true story of how Tom Horn was killed. It happened at the hands of honest men, though his gun had brought the outlaws to a quick and painless end. He never got the chance he gave to them.
Sam Bass was born in Indiana, it was his native home. And at the age of 17, Sam began to roam. First came out to Texas, a cowboy for to be. A kinder-hearted fella you seldom ever see. Sammy used to deal in race stock once on the Denton mare. Patched her in scrub races and took her to the fair. Sammy used to coin the money, spend it just as free. He always drank good whiskey wherever he might be. Well, Sam left the Collins Ranch in the merry month of May with a herd of Texas cattle the Black Hills for to see. Sold out in Custer City and then got on a spree. The harder set of cowboys you seldom ever see. On their way back to Texas, they robbed the UP train. They then split up in couples and started out again. Joe Collins and his partner were overtaken soon. With all their hard-earned money, they had to meet their doom. Sam made it back to Texas all right, side up with care. Rode into the town of Denton with all his friends to share. Sam's life was short in Texas, three robberies did he do. He robbed all the passengers and all the express cars too. Sam had four companions, four bold and daring lads. They were Richardson and Jackson, Joe Collins and old dad. Four more bold and daring cowboys the Rangers never knew. They whipped the Texas Rangers and they ran the boys in blue. Sam had another companion called Arkansas for short. Was shot by a Texas Ranger by the name of Thomas Floyd. Old Tom's a big six-footer and thinks he's mighty fly. But I can tell you his racket, he's just a deadbeat on the sly. Jim Murphy was arrested and then released on bail. He jumped his bond to Tyler and took the train for Terrell. But Mayor Jones had posted Jim, and that was all a stall. It was only a plan to capture Sam before the coming fall. Sam met his fate at Round Rock, July the 21st. They pierced poor Sam with rifle balls and emptied out his purse. Poor Sam, he is a corpse and 6 feet under clay. And Jackson's in the bushes trying to get away. Well, Jim had borrowed Sam's good gold and didn't want to pay. The only shot he saw was to give poor Sam away. Well, he sold out Sam and Barnes, left his friends to mourn. Oh, the scorching Jim will get when Gabriel blows his horn. He sold out Sam and Barnes, left his friends to mourn. Oh, the scorching Jim will get when Gabriel blows his horn. Oh, well, perhaps he's got to heaven, there's none of us can say. But if I'm right in my surmise, he's gone the other way.
Steve Cormier. Well, now, he only made that one record many, many, many years ago, and I'm certainly glad that I've got it. He sings those cowboy songs, I think, as well as they can be sung. Well, now, yeah, we have time for another poem here, one of those I dug out from the personal archive there. Banker Ralston. Now, Ralston founded the Comstock in Nevada, and that's how he made his money. Went down and founded modern San Francisco along with Sam Brannan. He started the Bank of San Francisco. Meanwhile, out there, went back in Daggett County, before it was a county, in the High Uinta Mountains. You look at a map, and over east of Brown's Hole, you'll still see on the map a place called Diamond Mountain. Why Diamond Mountain? Well, it was Charlie Kelly who brought those two things together. Banker Ralston in San Francisco and Diamond Mountain brought them together into one tale, which then I sat down late at night in my backyard and made a poem out of that called Diamond Mountain.
Young Philip Arnold walked in through the door and lowered a couple of bags to the floor. He said, "I'm from Utah to visit a while, and I'd be plumb pleased if you'd lock up my pile." Up stepped his partner, my dame Johnny Slack. He untied a string and dumped out the sack. Old banker Ralston, his eyes did explode. That pile was as rich as the whole Comstock load. There was diamonds and emeralds and sapphires too, and a couple of rubies as big as your shoe. Old Bill Ralston was nobody's fool, but he trembled all over and slobbered and drooled. "Well, He wined him and dined him and treated him fine, and he pumped them about that big diamond mine. But Arnold, he clammed up and Slack would not tell. This secret they had was too precious to sell. Then the banker resorted to villainous ways. He hounded them nights and he hounded them days. He'd offered the money and property, too. They agreed that a mere half million might do. Dave Coulter, who ran the old SP line, was picked as the man to look into this mine. With Arnold, he took him a blindfolded tour, and he wrote back a strike and a big one for sure. 'Twas then Henry Jennin, the great engineer, let out that the mine could be worked without fear. 20 bold miners are more than enough to wash out a million a month in the rough. So Ralston, he formed a big company and let out the stock at a right handsome fee. Rothschild sat at his big London bank, and the check that he mailed to Ralston was blank. Then young Clarence King with the surveying team come making his plats away up on the green. Where the river is wild and the country is raw, by the big diamond field, here's what he saw. There were diamonds and rubies all over the ground, where diamonds and rubies ain't normally found. They were salted in pockets as nice as you pleased, and some had been left in the forks of the trees. Well, he beat him a trail to the Wyoming side of the telegraph office. He made a hard ride. When the message arrived, you could hear Ralston roar as he foamed at the mouth and rolled on the floor. It turned out them diamonds was cheaper than sand. Those swindlers had bought them in old Amsterdam. And when banker Ralston had paid off his stocks, he'd put out $10 million for two sacks of rocks. So listen, you bankers, my song's nearly through. Don't gripe when some poor feller gets one on you. When you're riding around in your big fancy car, just remember the way that you got where you are.
Diamond Mountain. Yep, you can still see it on the map. You might want to go and visit. Might even still find some of those Amsterdam diamonds scattered around on the sandbars. Well, look, it's time to move on. Move on? Well, the prairie moved on, and the frontier moved on. The frontier moved on until it hit the Pacific Ocean, and, well, I guess it kept moving in its surrogates, you know, the annexation of Hawaii, the conquest of the Philippines, and then on to into Vietnam. Well, there's a whole other radio show there, isn't there? But the frontier did pass by, and I'm personally willing to let it go when it becomes more image than substance. It's time to look at it, at where I live, as a new thing. Yeah. As for me, I'm ready to hang up my cat pistols. This is the last thing you'll hear from me on this subject. This one right here, Steve Rumholtz, and he's going to sing to you, "The Man with the Big Hat is Buying."
We'd like to take you traveling with us. Cross country. Through the desert southwest. Arizona, New Mexico, especially Arizona. It's a hot day, and as we drive along, we can't help thinking that a cold beer and a sandwich sure would go good. So we pull up and stop in front of the only saloon in a dusty little town. The sign over the door says Harold's Cave Creek Corral. Push our way inside. Few people there, singing, drinking beer, maybe playing a jukebox once in a while. Up at the bar is a cowboy. He's about two sizes larger than life. And he's talking about the way things used to be.
On a sultry summer day, a cowboy came in off the road just to pass the time away. He pulled a stool up to the bar and pushed his hat back on his head. I listened to the stories told, to the words the cowboy said. He said,
I can tell you stories about the Indians on the plains. Talk about Wells Fargo and the coming of the train.
Talk of the slaughter of the buffalo that roam. Speak of all the settlers come out looking for a home.
Now the man with the big hat is by it. Drink up while the drinking is free. Drink up to the cowboys, a dead or a dying. Drink to my compadres and me. Drink to my compadres and me.
Well, his shirt was brown and faded, his hat was white and black, and the pants that once were blue, well, they were gray, and they had a pocket going back. He had a finger missing from the hand that rolled the smoke, while he smiled and talked to cowboys, but you knew it weren't no joke. He said,
I've seen a day so hot my pony could not stand. If your water bag was dry, don't count upon a land. And winters, hell, I've seen winters where your boots froze in the snow when your only thought was leaving, but you had no place to go.
Now the man with the big hat is buying. Drink up while the drinking is free. Drink up to the cowboys, a dead or a dying. Drink to my compadres and me. Drink to my compadres and me.
Well, he rested easy at the bar, his foot upon the rail, and laughed and talked the times he'd had while living on the trail. The silence never broke him as the words poured from his lips, as quiet as the 45 he carried on his hip. He said,
I've rode the cattle drives from here to San Antone. 10 days in the saddle, you know, and weary to the bone. I've rode from here to Wichita without a woman's smile. The campfire where I cooked my beans was the only light for miles.
Now the man with the big hat is buying. Drink up while the drinking is free. Drink up to the cowboys, a dead or a dying. Drink to my compadres and me. Drink to my compadres and me.
Cigarette as he walked toward the door. I heard his spurs jingling as his boot heels hit the floor. He loosened up his belt a notch and pulled his hat down on his head. Turned to say goodbye to me, and this is what he said.
Now the high lines chase the highways and the fences close the range. To see a working cowboy is a sight that's mighty strange. Cowboy's life is lonesome, and his lot was not the best. If it wasn't for the life he lived, there wouldn't be no West.
Now the man with the big hat is buying. Drink up while the drinking is free. Drink up to the cowboys, a dead or a dying. Drink to my compadre. Drink to my compadres and me.
This is you, Utah Phillips. Yeah, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you have been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Thanks for taking this journey with me. I have come a long way, using other men's maps for the turnings. I have a long way to go. It is time I drew the map again, spread with the broad colors of life and words of my own, saying, here the people worked hard and died for the wrong reasons. Here wild strawberries tell the time of year. I could not sleep here while bellboys beyond the surf rang. Here trains passed in the night, crying of distance, calling to cities far away, listening for an answer.